Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Eham Shiguru Shiku Kamalam Shigurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Ravana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitam Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Chakanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Suvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Thank you all for coming. She cooked just the right amount today. She cooked just the right amount, almost everything came. That's better. If we have more prasadam and more people come, that's perfect. And if more come, we can cook more. Right? Prabhupada said we can feed the whole city, he said, in Australia. He said, how could you do that? We had a small temple. He said, you bring them, I'll show you. He never brought the whole city. This chapter is called the Yoga of the Supreme Person. So Krishna describes, to some extent, himself as supreme. The first part is about the material world, this upside-down tree, which is a reflection. It's interesting in that verse 3 and 4, it says you can't perceive this in this world, and no one can understand where it ends and where it starts, or where its foundation is. But with determination, you have to cut it down. So that's interesting. But that the way that how would you cut it down if you can't find where it starts and you don't know anything about it and you can't perceive it? Huh? Mm-hmm. How would you cut it down? All this thing? Mm-hmm. Huh?
You just try it out.
Huh?
You just try one way or the other.
How do you try? You have to have this. Krishna does it. You have to be determined and try to serve Krishna, then Krishna will cut it down. Somehow you'll get relieved from this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. And not being attached to things in the material world, then we can cut it down. It's symbolic in one sense. But that's our attachment in the material world. Everybody is entangled. Here we see quite a few banyan trees. And you see how they're attached, right? They just keep reaching down more and more, trying to get more roots. Or they just wrap around themselves if they can't find any more land. The different kinds. I always think they're the most attached. You know. And the banyan tree... These big banyan trees, they don't know how old they are because, you know, they cut the tree and then they can count the rings or something. But the banyan tree, they don't know where it started. So they can't know if they're ever getting the original one. all wrapped up amongst ourselves. Some of them are huge, and they always build temples in them, and then the temples get all devoured gradually by the tree. Just crunches everything. But they're also considered very auspicious. Then after you get free from attachment, one has to seek that place from which, having gone, he never returns. And then surrender the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we get questioned a lot, how do you surrender? What is surrender? Right? Ever had that question? Have been asked that question? It comes up a lot. But here Krishna says, those who are free from false prestige, illusion and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal region. It's quite similar to the 728, right? Who knows that one? Loud, say it loud. Say it loud. Loud. Karmanam. Te dwanda. Te dwanda moha nirmukta. So the same things are pointed out. Free from bad association. Free from the dualities. Not lusty anymore. Then one will serve Krishna with strong vow, determination. And that's how Krishna's saying, that's what it requires, surrender. Surrender is defined by six symptoms. I'm not sure I can think of all of them because I'm not surrendered. But one is to accept things favorable for serving the Lord, even if it's not your thing, and to reject things unfavorable even if you really like it. So people have to do that. The gross things are like, you know, the four regular principles, and then whatever service, and then that's two, and then to be completely dependent on Krishna, that there's no other shelter, and to always expect the mercy of the Lord. Devotee always expects it, you know, no matter what's happening, he thinks it's mercy actually, but or he's expecting soon the mercy will come. So he's always happy. He's not thinking that, you know, Krishna's never going to help me. Sometimes we think like that. See, for us, because we live such a short life, even, you know, a few days seems like such a long time. But for Krishna, the whole life of Lord Brahma is only one breath of Mahavishnu. And for Krishna, that's not even one blink. So if we look at it from Krishna's point of view, things are going very fast. For us, Krishna's mercy is always there. And devotees always there. What are the other two?
Humility.
Yeah, always meek and humble. That's one.
Fully
surrendered. The last one is to be always meek and humble. That's the hardest one. Of course, it would automatically come about if one has the other ones.
As a short question, in this regard, should I ask you now?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I read the book, in some places he talks about that we have to take risk, but we have to take calculated risk, right?
Yeah.
You see, I mean, okay, we can depend on Krishna, but if we have the capacity to fully surrender or not, right?
Yeah.
Because of our conditioning, and then if we try to jump into it too fast, maybe we just get swallowed up or something. So, in that context, you know, how can we, like, sometimes
like what?
Like, you know, there might be certain things that might be favorable for your Krishna consciousness, but is it really long term or not? You know, you might be able to do it for some time, forcefully, or you know, try it for some time, but if it's not really coming from the heart, or you know, if you're not really pure enough, then you know, kind of
You have to be careful on that. Sometimes people say, well, I've been chanting, but it, you know, I just stopped chanting because I wasn't really pure enough or something. You have to be careful. The basic things, you know, the basic things we can't give up, but, you know, like, well, like buying a big building or something, taking a big debt. Someone, you know, Prabhupada took risks, but he also, you know, things were moving ahead when he did it. And he calculated, I read, every property devotee bought, Prabhupada would calculate, well, this one will be worth more, and this one will be useful, and this one is no good. But they were going to buy one very expensive place in Australia somewhere. And they didn't get it by Krishna's grace, but Prabhupada told a story of one man, he was poor, and he saw these very big golden earrings. And he just got mad after those golden earrings. And he worked, you know, two jobs, and he saved money, and he bought these earrings. And he put them in, but they were so heavy, they were ripping his ear apart, that he couldn't use them. So he gave that example, like if you buy too big of a place, you know, you go in over your head. Same time he wanted us to. So it's a matter of, you know, everything we have to calculate. The spiritual practices, that's another thing. You know, doing a particular type of work, a particular type of service, you know, if it's, or if someone's sick and Prabhupada said, first things, take care of your health. You know, don't think, well, I have to work, you know. No matter, even if you have an important service, you have to balance our life. But the spiritual practices, like some people, they think like that about their spiritual practices. Well, you know, I didn't take intoxication for 3 years, but I always thought about it, so I just do it. Many, many devotees have done like that. You know, the mind drives them crazy. Because they didn't get a taste for the holy name. That's why we try to promote more and more kirtan, more any kind of kirtan, more festival kind of things, so the devotees get a taste. They get a relaxed taste. And we want more devotees than everybody can. Of course, managers, more devotees sometimes, it means more anxiety, but it means more ecstasy also. It's like having more children. The family has many children, and it's more and more headache, more and more work, but it's also nice. They get so much pleasure from it also. Six symptoms of surrender are, one should perform only those actions favorable for devotional service to Krishna. One should give up everything unfavorable. So that's kind of the same, both sides of the coin. One should firmly believe that Krishna will protect one in all circumstances and that no one is a better protector than Krishna. This conviction should be distinct from the monastic philosophy that one is as good as Krishna. One should always think that Krishna is great and one is always protected by him. Not any demigod or not any society. Ultimately, it's always Krishna. Whatever other person comes along or thing comes along to maintain us or protect us, it's ultimately Krishna. Number four, one should have the conviction that Krishna is one's maintainer, and one should not take shelter of any demigod for maintenance. 5. One should always remember that one's activities and desires are not independent. In other words, the devotee should feel completely dependent on Krishna, and thus he should act and think as Krishna desires. 6. One should always think himself the poorest of the poor and feel totally dependent on the mercy of Krishna. And be meek and humble. There's a saying, you should be a fool in front of the spiritual master. So some take that wrong and we think, well, the spiritual master asked me to do this, but I'm a fool, I can't do that. I'm too stupid. I'm not qualified. That's not what it means. What does it mean? It means we always think the spiritual master knows more than I do. Not that I know more than him and he tells me I can do it, but I say, no, I'm just a fool. These kind of, Maya is so tricky, you know, so we have to watch out. The verses here, it's interesting. The first time I went to the temple for Bhagavad Gita class, the temple was about 4 or 5 brahmacharis. They just got the house. They had one light bulb, one stand, you know, with just a light bulb, no cover. And that's all. And dark. And they had one copy of Bhagavad Gita. In those days, it was only the little blue one, and the store was out. So the verse was this one. I enter into each planet, and by my energy, they stay in orbit. I become the moon, and thereby supply juice of life to all vegetables. So I never forgot that verse. Somehow it really, we used to say, blew my mind. You know, quite inconceivable. But it's actually known. One devotee in Greece, his father's a farmer and green grower. He was saying how the vegetables, they don't have any taste now because they grow them in these tunnels and they don't ever get any moonlight. So they don't have any taste. The farmers knew that the moon, you know, has a big effect. Of course, you plant things on the new moon, and then as the moon gets bigger, it helps the plants to come up. But that's what gives the flavor. So now we're seeing we don't get so much flavor. There's the 3 verses in a row. The splendor of the sun comes from me, and the splendor of the moon, and the splendor of fire. Where is that? That's also in another place, right? Prabhasmi Shasi Suraya. Rasaham Apsakuntaya. Prabhasmi Shasi Suraya. I'm the taste in water, and I'm the light in the sun and the moon. So when we see the sun in the universal form, what are the sun and the moon? Yeah. 2 eyes. That light comes from the sunlight, and moonlight is coming from Krishna. So Prabhupada, when someone asked him, have you seen Krishna? He said, everybody's seeing Krishna. Then he quoted that verse. He said, everybody sees the sun and the moon. Everybody tastes water. Everybody sees Krishna. He didn't say, yes, I'm very special when I see Krishna dancing on my bed. And he just said, everybody's seeing Krishna, but they don't know. Then after the next one is, I'm the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living beings. And I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the 4 kinds of foodstuff. I don't know, I made some offense to that. Vaishmanavra. Fire of digestion. Some people have, for some reason, very, very big. Some people have none. We have to adjust accordingly. Bhima had the fire called Vrikka. Super strong fire, so he had to eat. He had to eat a lot, otherwise he'd just burn up from the fire in his stomach was so strong. Then I guess the most famous verse of this chapter is 15. Right? Who knows it? No. Vedanta. That's very nice. Krishna is in everyone's heart. So remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge come from Krishna. So only Krishna can cover the soul to forget him. But the soul has some desire, he wants to forget Krishna. Krishna has to cover. So when we remember something, it's Krishna. When we forget, it's Krishna. Knowledge, it's all coming from Krishna. So if we are fortunate, we'd remember that all the time. Of course, we can't blame Krishna when we forget something. It's not that he wants us to forget. Maybe sometimes we forget something, so we end up another place where he wanted us. But he wants remembering, ultimately we want to remember Krishna. Remember that we want to serve Krishna. Not just remembering facts and figures. Right? Like many education these days. Some people, they know, like if you watch a sports game, you know, and they have those announcers, and when so-and-so does something, they tell you his whole life story and how many goals he made, and, you know, they know everything. And so they study that. Some people, like in America, they have that baseball. They have so many statistics, averages. And some men, you know, their child goes to school, but he can't learn mathematics or anything, but then he watches baseball and he knows everybody's everything, you know, because he's interested in it. But it, so Krishna gives the memory, Krishna gives the forgetfulness, and he gives knowledge, but the real thing is we want to remember Krishna, and we don't want to forget Krishna, and we want to have knowledge of Krishna. That's a basic, there's so many rules in the Vedas for different varnas and ashrams. So for the brahmana, there's so many rules. You know, they have to face a certain direction when they go to the, you know, relief, and they have to face a direction when they eat in the morning, a different direction when they eat in the, everything is chalked out. And all day long, so many, many little things to worry about. That, so now we have these smarta brahmins, where they're so concerned about all those things that they don't know why they forget Krishna. I just heard a story I never heard before, but somebody said that, you know, they met Vishnu Jan Swami at the time, and he was coming from Radhakund. And they asked him about Radhakund, and he said that the turtles are always meditating on Radha and Krishna. You know, there's turtles in the Radhakund. And Prabhupada said that those turtles were brahmanas in their last night. They were taking 2-3 hours to put on their tilak. You know. Some of them are. They have so many mantras, you know, for every tilak. And then they feel like they're perfect, you know. So it's all coming from Krishna. So those are all the rules and regulations of everything boil down to those two. Never forget Krishna and always remember Krishna. That's actually in Padma Purana, I think. Some Purana. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And then that's the purpose of all the other rules. Of any tapasya. It's also stated in Bhagavatam that if you're not remembering Krishna, what is the use of any tapasya? I mean, like Hiranyakashipu did tapasya like no one ever did before and never will do again. So what's the use? It's tapasya in the mode of ignorance, destroying his body and trying to get power to destroy others. And if you are remembering Krishna all the time, then what is the need of tapasya? Extra tapasya. Our tapasya process is easy. We just chant regularly 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, take prasadam, read the books. Not so difficult, you know, compared to yogis or... Did Thai monks, any of them do like really austere things? Some of the orders of monks in Japan, they're very austere. They sit out in the winter under the cold waterfall or something. they do that kind of austerity. It's called shugyo. Kugyo means austerity. Shugyo means religious austerity. One guy I met, he was drunk, he said, and it was in the winter, he was barefoot, he said, this is my shugyo. Of course, if you're drunk, you don't feel it. Not austere then. And some Buddhists are very, very austere. The Buddha himself tried that. Super austerity. There's some pictures of him with just bones like Hiranyakashipu. But then he realized that didn't free him completely. That didn't free him from suffering. And he gave it up, and even he was criticized by different so-called followers. He went for the middle path when he had the realization that balanced life, is good for others. So Krishna's in everyone's heart. That's stated in another place too, Yanta Rudrani Mayaya. I'm in everyone's heart. And they're riding as if on a machine made out of Maya, the body. And he's directing the wanderings of all living entities. So that's something we need to learn. The devotee asked Prabhupada long ago, how can you see Krishna in everyone's heart? He said, just keep reading the Bhagavad Gita. Because devotees are thinking you're going to see like Hanuman, Krishna. Prabhupada was never like that. You have to understand. Seeing means understanding. It may not be an actual seeing. Although when one really realizing will see Krishna everywhere, but in everyone's heart, every living entity, not just your friends, not just your country people or your family people, right? Like many so-called religious people think, God's only in the heart of the people in my religion. My cult or my country, everyone else is not quite human. Like they say, animals don't have a soul. And when they had slaves in England and America, they also said that. Those people don't have souls. They're just animals. God made them to be slaves. And they're better off being slaves. They still say that. They were better off anyway, But everyone is the same. Even the bodies are the same. They look different on the outside, that's all. But all the organs can go back and forth between anybody, right? The blood. You can get blood from an African or a Chinese, it'll work. It doesn't have to be Nepali blood if you need, if you need a liver transplant or something. You don't think, no, it can only come from a pure devotee or something. You need the hospital, you need blood, you take it from anywhere. Because it'll work. The humans are all the same. But somehow we have all these different languages and different ideas. That's what we have to overcome. So by studying Bhagavad Gita, we can realize that. So then Krishna says, that there's the Supreme Lord, the imperishable Lord is beyond all that. And I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible. And because I am the greatest, I am celebrated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. Therefore, he engages in my devotional service. So that's another one that stated in different ways in many, many places in the Bhagavad Gita. If you know Krishna, you know everything, because everything comes from Krishna. And any other knowledge is not necessary for perfecting your human life. Although, according to one's karma and dharma, you may have knowledge of something. We need all the different kinds of people. We need carpenters, and we need electricians, and we need cleaners, and we need, you know, people. We need every type of person. And devotees then, they help everybody because they engage a carpenter. One example, the carpenter builds an altar, then the devotees worship Krishna on it. So the carpenter gets mercy, or he builds the house. Someone fixes your car and you use it for Krishna, then he gets a gata sukriti. He didn't do it, you know, out of his heart to serve Krishna. He didn't know even. He did it for money. But somehow that's a causeless mercy of the Lord. The devotees get their car fixed, get their hair cut, or whatever they do. So everybody benefits by something. Then, you know, many people benefit. If we're carefully using everything for Krishna, when we clean the pots, then it feeds different living entities down the drain or something. I see some people were feeding these stray cats, but there's not very many of them. I was looking this morning, there's hardly any dogs or cats or strays. Some places there's so many cats. They're just everywhere, and so many people put out food and the cats eat it. So in this verse 5, the purport, this is the verse about mosquitoes tonight. Those who are free from false prestige. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Trinadapi sunichena dororapi se ishuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should not have false prestige and be proud of whatever we have in the material world. In the Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said the beggar is proud of his one, what do you call him? One bot. Do they have smaller than bot? Huh? What? But satong, yeah. Is even smaller than a bot. So the beggar is proud of that. I think we saw one beggar the other day, had so much stuff. We saw it, just right next to the temple, Bumpkin. They just collect and collect, but then they sell it. They get a little bit, you know. Completely junk, but they can, you know, recycle a little bit of it. Anyway, no pride. Humble. Humble means not wanting to be recognized or honored in the material world. But we should honor devotees for their devotional service. But we should not want to be honored. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the Lord of the material nature, it's very difficult for him to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not Lord of the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. He can begin. So Krishna sometimes, you know, like when Lord Chaitanya, when that Digvijay Pandit came, so he was very proud. Nobody could even understand the questions he asked to debate with him. So they'd just get bewildered and tongue-tied, you know. He would ask a question, even the biggest scholar would just... So he was coming, and Nimai was still young, like, I think 13 years or something, 14. But he had students already. And the students were worried, you know, that this guy's coming. And Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, Krishna does not like pride. And he gave a listing of Hiranyakashipu and Ravana and different people that were very proud and how Krishna smashed them. So his pride will be smashed. But Lord Chaitanya did it very nicely, privately. He didn't publicly humiliate him. And then he became a great devotee. And he had entourage, you know, elephants and people blowing trumpets when he came and everything. He left it all and just became a Vaishnava mendicant. because he realized who was Lord Chaitanya. For one who is always expecting some honor in the material world, not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion. For although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, the earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is a proprietor of the world. This is strongly propagated by the misinterpretation of the Bible. Anybody know the Bible? The one of the verses that they love is the rascals. From the very beginning of the Bible, it describes it, you know, the earth a little bit and the different living entities, and it says, man shall have dominion. So they take it that that means the man, it's all his, and whatever he can have whatever he wants and do whatever he wants. So by using that so-called, you know, it is a real thing in the Bible, but dominion means like you take care. A king has a domain. He takes care of the citizens. But they're thinking, well, it's all, men are superior and everything is for the men's pleasure. So we can pollute all the rivers, we can kill all as many animals as we want, we can cut down the forests, we can do anything, because God said, man, it belongs to us. The Prabhupada's mentioned it, but that's natural in the material world, but somehow that's something they've really, even somebody wrote a whole book called Dominion, just based on that misconception, describing all the demoniac things human beings do just for sport. Like the British royalty, the so-called, you know, whatever they were, the lords, they would have a fox hunt. So there'd be like 20 people on horses, and they'd capture some fox and let it go, and they'd all go chasing after it until they kill it. Or bullfighting. Even if the bull wins, somebody else comes and kills it. You know, give them a break. So, because they're thinking, men, God gave us this world as a playground, and everything is just for the pleasure of humans, whatever they want. Completely crazy. So when he's freed from this false association caused by familial, social, and national affections, these faulty associations bind one to the material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from the dual conceptions such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, victory and defeat, honor and dishonor, blame and credit. He becomes full in knowledge. Then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, that's right. I was going to say it's late, he's agreeing, right? Yeah, any question or should we stop? Is it nice to see so many devotees here? Yeah? these embassies are very interesting places.